everyone, and welcome to this week's The EdTech Podcast. My name is Sophie Bailey, and if you're in the UK, you're probably complaining about the heat, as it's now too sunny, apparently. But isn't it wonderful, though? It's been a sad week in the UK, and I wish all my listeners the very best with their friends and family over the bank holiday weekend. You can't beat that. This week's announcements. First up, the EdTech Podcast will be a media partner at Ovum's Future EdTech event, which takes place on the 13th to 14th of June in London. The event, focusing on higher ed, will explore class strategies and tools to elevate student experience and engagement on and off campus with the use of technology. If you're a uni listening in, it's free to attend and you can register using the link in the show notes. If you're not a uni and eligible for a free pass, the good news is EdTech Podcast listeners get a 10% discount by entering the code edpod/10 at the reg checkout. How mega is that? What else? Back on the higher ed focus, I'll also be chairing an event on everyone's favourite topic of the moment, GDPR. Full Fabrics event as part of the London EdTech Week takes place at Imperial College on the 22nd of June. Full details are in the show notes, but speakers include the Senior Policy Officer at the Information Commissioner's Office, an Associate Professor in Information Security, and a Senior Manager for Cybersecurity, Privacy and Resilience. And finally, don't forget the EdTech Podcast's very own event on Is EdTech a Thing? A live podcast in collaboration with Nesta and supported by Cooley, running on the 19th of June. It's free, but you do need to register, and the link is also in the show notes. Right, on to this week's show, looking at chatbots and specifically chatbots in higher education. I'm speaking with Geir Sand Nilsen from Norwegian outfit EdTech Foundry, and we talk about chatbots, using stutters to your own advantage, and the bittersweet notion of teaching artificial intelligence how to do your job. Some key questions include: what are chatbots? Why are they of interest in the context of educational institutions? And how can chatbots help with peer-to-peer learning? This episode was recorded at South by Southwest EDU 17, and if you listen out carefully, you'll be able to hear some of Austin City's trademark grackles in the background. A shout out to Class Central for sponsoring this week's episode. Yay! So, it's Wednesday. Probably had too many margaritas last night.
Oh yeah.
And it's just gone midday. Hope you're going to eat something in a minute. And here with
Geir Sand
from EdTech Foundry.
Yeah, that's the business, and the brand we're building is DifferChat.
DifferChat.
Yeah.
So that's a chatbot business, and then the actual chatbot's called DifferBot. Is that correct?
Correct.
Excellent.
So Differ is the actual chat where students can chat with each other, and the bot lives inside there.
Okay, and then so, taking a step right back, if you were to explain what you do to someone you've never met, and like what the problem is that you're trying to solve, how would you go about doing that?
Alrighty. So we all know that students have to be engaged to learn. And there's a big challenge now in reaching the students. So we want to build the most simple way you can reach the student, engage them so they can discuss more, fail more, and then learn. And per now, that's a chat, where it's the lowest barrier to talk, and we are adding the bots to stimulate them to talk more.
Okay, and so, I mean, I think what's interesting is I think people are hearing about chatbots more and more, and, you know, perhaps some of the early adopter type of educators out there and some of the people that are on the EdTech side are familiar with chatbots, but lots of people aren't. So can you tell us what a chatbot is and also what you think the opportunity is in EdTech or in education?
Yeah, sure. So a bot is just like a human being which you can chat to. So messenger chat, but it's with data, not with a human. So it's just like chatting, and you get the bot actually answers right away. So the user interface is what you are used to chatting with.
And I met your colleague Christian at the Nordic EdTech conference. Yeah. And so I suppose that was at the Danish Technical University. And I suppose how I kind of understood what you're doing there is, you know, you've got increasingly issues of kind of student teacher ratios and expectations from students on, you know, wanting support more and more. But with people being online and connected, obviously that's quite a pressure on lecturers who are human beings. Yeah. To get back to everyone in terms of individual answers and, you know, being able to respond. And I suppose the chatbot then becomes like a sort of triage service in terms of, okay, well, this is like a frequently asked question, so I can give you the answer.
Yeah.
And then what you were just sort of showing me on the actual platform that you've developed is, if that chatbot doesn't understand the answer, it will go and refer that back to the lecturer.
Yeah, we can just start there, I think, as there are two cases we solve. First one is when the student asks, given that he actually asked something. Then we can step in and answer him right away. And per now, we cover about half of the stuff they ask about. And generally, they ask about the basic stuff. Where's my file? Yeah. Stuff like that. And that's pretty simple to kind of just, here's the file. Give that to him. So in that sense, we are saving time. Mm-hmm. Teachers saves time on those boring questions they hate. We can take those. Those questions can come either to the bot or it can come in a group chat, for example. So students are likely not to ask a bot, actually ask a friend, or they ask in a course chat. So we also have to be able to listen in on where the chatting actually happens. And as we have seen now, is that the students, they prefer to ask where they can get the right answer. And the right answer doesn't have to be the correct answer, but it's the one that will get them the grade, which is whatever the teacher says. So they want to ask teachers one-to-one, mm-hmm. and the teachers don't want them to ask them one-by-one. They want them to ask in a course chat.
I've got you. And part of this is about sort of confidence or things of a sensitive issue. You don't necessarily want to do that in a group environment. But you also sometimes want to do that anonymously. So asking sort of an automated persona is my thinking behind this as well. Is I caught up with my the person that's replaced me in terms of the head of content at BET, and he was saying that, because I said, oh, you know, you guys should connect, it'd be great to have some chatbots on the program, and he was telling me that they were close to getting Durex's chatbot along at the event, which I thought was really interesting, because in the UK they've just sort of made sex education compulsory, and then obviously there's that thing of being able to ask whichever question you want if you know that it's a chatbot out there.
Yeah.
I suppose what you then have to be very careful about is the security of the service, so that none of those conversations can get hacked and leaked as well.
Yeah, there's a really cool point there, because students are a bit scared of looking stupid, so they are afraid of asking. When we say it's a bot, we make it into a bot. We say it's a point that we don't track you, we don't judge you, it's a bot, so ask whatever you want to. Then we start to get those stupid things in, which is really good, because you need those out of the way.
Yep.
To learn. So the bot is kind of a way to kind of like, you ask those silly, most stupid things in there. But on the other side, they still want the teacher to kind of tell them what's right.
Yep.
So you have to balance those two. You can ask the stupid things to the bot, and the more important stuff they want to ask the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So we tried making the bot into like a human once, and what happened was that the kind of things they asked changed. They asked a little bit less. And they asked more about stuff they knew, so they didn't look that stupid.
Yeah, which is quite funny when you consider that they're sort of trying to show off, but to this kind of non-human entity. I mean, what's your opinion on artificial intelligence more broadly speaking?
Yeah. Broadly, I think it's super cool. It can solve lots of the things where the human beings are not really good. But what I'm missing there is more the practical aspect of it. I mean, in our case, AI doesn't really solve things. So what we want is that students ask other students, not the bot. Because learning happens when people talk to each other. Mm-hmm. So the AI in our case is more like, who should they talk with? How to understand where is the right place to actually ask those kind of things you're actually asking now. So our bot shouldn't have to answer everything. That doesn't make sense, because then you train them to, you can always go to this source and find a fact, and you learn pretty much nothing. You learn to go to a place and find a fact. Mm-hmm. But you should explore stuff. You should try and fail. So the bot should kind of stimulate that instead.
Yeah.
And that's a different kind of AI. When people think about AI, it's about finding the most fantastic answer, which is complex and use clever stuff, to come up with like the answer.
Yeah, very quickly as well. I mean, I think that's really cool, because I think, although I can absolutely see the advantage of asking like a sensitive question, at the same time, that's part of life, is like being able to put your hand up and say, do you know what, I don't know that, and asking someone and then kind of having that dialogue. So I like the fact that it then refers you as well to someone, to a human that has expertise in that area, to kind of conduct that discussion and why it might be relevant to human problems as well.
One other point there is that this is this is part one of the whole bot, when students ask, but most people don't ask. Most people are getting information and just do what they have to do.
Yeah.
So if they ask, they're okay, they're doing fine, because they bothered to ask. So the bigger challenge here is to engage those who don't ask.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the bot comes in pretty handy.
Because it can see a sort of data picture of who's not asking questions and things?
Yeah, it can see everything. We can see if they're logged in, who they're actually talking with, do they talk at all. So we know what they're doing, and based on that, we can kind of try to nag them and say, hey, come on. Hey, dude, you should join in.
So what happens if a learner is part of that institution but doesn't want to engage with a bot or that platform to understand their learning? So it's a type of learner where that just doesn't suit them. And so that it's not like the fact that they're not engaging may not be indicative of the fact they're not learning. They just decide, okay, I don't want to engage in this way.
Yeah, and they can say just stop it. if they really want to. You bot, stop that.
Yeah.
But should they be able to? I mean, we know for a fact that they have to be engaged to learn. I mean, that's a given fact, I think, mm-hmm. in this world. So it's a bit up to the schools to decide this mm-hmm. kind of things. You have the option to kind of to allow students to say stop it.
Mm-hmm.
But if they should or not, it's not up to us to judge, I think.
What's your own background, and how did you come to the point of launching this? And
oh, that's a long story. I can start. I, of course, I didn't finish school, so I'm one of those guys.
Yeah.
I left school to start a marketing company.
Okay.
We got funding from the Singaporean state, so I lived there for some time.
I like Singapore.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Amazing food.
Safe. Too safe, maybe.
Yeah,
it's a bit boring that way.
What's weird though is everyone says, oh, it's boring, and then when you go out the evening, like, I don't know, it's something about the drinks and the combination of maybe the size of the people, I don't know, but there were just drunk sort of young people asleep everywhere.
Yeah, anyway, left that place. Yeah. And went back to Norway. And
that's where you're from?
Yes, that's where I'm from, as you can probably hear as well. And I started a company called Mobile School, and sold license fees to about 1,000 schools, which is the whole company was actually started in a really fun way, because my mom was a dean in a school, and one Sunday night she her school got a threat from a kid. So a kid threatened to bomb the school. Yeah. And there she sat on a Sunday night and had no way she can talk to the kids. She couldn't reach out to them and say, please don't come to the school tomorrow. So she had to get up early and just stand outside the school and say, please don't go in there. So based on that, she gave me a call and said, hey guy, can you make something to help me with this? I need to be able to reach the kids. So we made this SMS tool, which was a basic SMS tool for reaching the kids. And the kids can also send messages back to the school, like I'm sick today or whatever like that. So we made software based on that and scaled it. And then I left that company and started in the social media sphere.
Yeah.
Working with brands and stayed there for 2 years till I kind of realized it doesn't give sense to me anymore. I don't do anything. And sell stuff for brands. That's mm-hmm. what you do. So
did you feel a bit empty?
Yeah, really empty. I did nothing for real. I didn't create anything.
And as a creator, are you a developer type or what's your skill set?
I don't know, actually, to be honest. I know a little bit of everything. So I don't think I can do one thing really good.
Yeah, I
know some tech. I know some business, but kind of in the middle there.
Yeah,
but I'm good at starting stuff. I hate running stuff, but starting stuff, that's pretty okay.
That is the exciting part, though, isn't it?
No, it is. Yeah. Oh.
And so after the social experience, you then launch what you're doing now.
Yeah, then we got a call from the
Norwegian
Business
School.
And I have to think now. 36.
Wow, that's quite a lot to pack in.
Yeah, I have packed in quite a lot.
Yeah.
But in 2015, we got a call from the Norwegian Business School. I think the second largest business school in Europe, I think.
Okay.
And they said to us, like, you guys, we need some new tools. We don't know exactly what this should solve, and we definitely don't know how to fix it, but we pay you some now and you fix it, right? You sort it out. So we started with them to kind of understand what's going on here and understand the real pains. Mm-hmm. And we spent a year on that, I think, just talking to people, testing stuff. And understood that engagement is the key. Students don't bother, but they don't. And we spent last year on testing different stuff and realized all of a sudden that, something is happening there. Mm. We are able to engage there, so we have to look into it. So we tested the bots last year and this is the thing. So then we build different now and plan to launch that this fall and scale it, and that's why we're here as well.
Okay, so you're launching it this fall?
Yeah, testing it now.
Yeah.
And piloting this fall and launching it later on this year.
And so I spoke to someone where they did some sort of A/B testing on chatbots and engagement. The engagement was really high, but then when they even put a very nominal low fee on the service, people weren't willing to pay. So with your business model, will the universities pay as opposed to individual users, or how do you plan on doing that?
We start with creating value. Mm-hmm. That's number one. And when we have the chats, when we are the place they chat, we can create real money. Mm-hmm. So focus number one is creating value for the students and the schools. So we're testing business model as well now. Per now, we are leaning to a $1 per student per month. Mm-hmm. As the model. One challenge we have, I have to be really, really open with that, is the sales time to schools. Mm. It's terrible.
So that's kind of pushed you away from like chatting to institutions, thinking about them, because actually that would just take a long, long time to get going.
Well, we have to find a way to get in quick. That might mean that I have to give stuff away, mm-hmm. But that's fine. As long as we are the place where they go to ask, we will create value.
And who's investing in you at the moment, apart from the Norwegian government?
Yeah, we got some grants. Norway is fantastic for that, by the way. So if you want to start something, Norway is the place now. We have no more oil, but we have some money, so that's pretty good. And we are also investors. We have one called Nordic Impact.
Okay.
A Nordic Impact, pretty new business now. Started last year. Invested in us, and they are also involved in Learn Capital.
Okay.
And they are investing in stuff that gives sense to them and impact on the world.
Yeah.
So it was a very, very good match. We didn't plan to actually race, but it was such a cultural match and business and personal match that we just had to say yes to it. So we plan on doing a round next, and this year as well, to scale things up a little bit.
Yeah, really interesting. And from someone who has a good understanding of chatbots, then, and obviously everyone will look at yours. But are there, which other chatbots, like companies or initiatives, should people go and like look up that you think are interesting
in the edtech field? It's quite few of them. Almost none, as I've met. There's one called AdmitHub. AdmitHub does kind of the part before you start the school.
Okay.
So to get you to join the school, and while we do the course chats.
Yep.
So it's a little bit different bots there, but that's also...
So it's like an admissions chatbot type thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To get you started, you really apply, but you have to show up as well.
How long do you think it will be before every major school and every major university uses chatbots to some degree?
Everyone?
Most of them, 70%.
70%. Okay, give it 4 to 5 years.
Yeah.
I think it will be pretty quickly. Mm. But someone has to crack the code on the sales cycles. Because it can't take two years to get something in there. So it has to be either cheap or make possible to buy at a lower level. So each teacher or a department combined.
And are you going to integrate with existing like LMS systems? So, I'm thinking about some of the platforms that many of the universities will use. So whether that's like Moodle or Blackboard or Full Fabric or any of those guys, like just to sort of plug into something that exists already?
Yeah, I think we have to at some point. We have to do it on... We can do it on certain different kind of levels there, but we at least need the data from them, like the files and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then the other point where the entry point is. If the students go to them first and then to us, we need to kind of be in there. What you have seen now is that we work outside, and that's doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
So now we are outside the really canvases and Moodles.
And then outside of education chatbots, which are the chatbots that excite you?
Yeah. Everywhere where you can save time, there are some... Everywhere there are people doing manual work for simple stuff. Support work. I think all the banks will have a bot within 2 years.
Because it'll be quicker.
Quicker, and they will save lots of time and
so what
money.
Happens to all those people that do those kind of simple, boring jobs?
I have no idea. They will probably do something else. But if you have a job is manual and you pretty much do the same thing, all the time, you have to figure out something else to do. But on the other side there are tons of bots that must be trained. And those people, I guess, will know how to train the bots. So I guess some of them will go to training of the bots. And some of them can also be to spend more time on those who actually need it. Those who really need help and give them some better service.
And so one question I always ask my interviewees is, Are there any particular books or resources or people that had an impact on you in terms of something that you might go back to or think about, or that kind of framed who you are today and how you think?
I like actually Darren Brown's geeky stuff. So how the brain works.
Yeah.
So read and sing.
You're not going to hypnotize me, are you?
No, I'm not that geeky about it, but but I think it's cool how you can kind of make people do stuff based on how you just behave or say things.
So it's like that book Nudge as well, a little bit about creating the options and sort of without trying, almost creating the path that you want someone to go down.
And another direction I like is how you build a culture. Suppose, for example, it's a great case there. Tony C, or is it C?
Yeah, something like that.
Suppose is really well known for how they build their business culture, how it's open, how you trust people, and how you create small cells of teams with actually no titles. They just do whatever they have to do right now. So I think it's really cool to see how you can scale people, which is what we have to do now. And we also what we do in the bots, actually. We scale people, just in a different way, though. But so I'm interested in all that fucks with the mind or that involves scaling people somehow.
Amazing. And so which other issues will artificial intelligence solve, do you think? And what credence do you give to the idea that, some of the greatest minds on the planet are concerned about, perhaps going beyond that tipping point, and like what role do we have then?
Oh, that's a big one.
Yeah, if you don't mind like just doing that in a 30 second.
Well, we will be able to find any answer we want at any time. And we might not even have to look for it. It's just there. So why do we need to think ourselves in a way? So what will the role of the human...
If you think about, I think, therefore I am, we're going to have to work out an entirely new one, because we'll just be like, well, I don't need to bother. So yeah, I chill, therefore I am. We're just going to be enormous.
It would be super strange, because it's somehow the same thing as I felt when I didn't work with something I really cared about. Many people will feel the same way, because you are not needed anymore. So it will be a great challenge to find something people care about that they can do every day, passionate about, and think have a meaning. So all the social soft things is going to be a big challenge. The roles of the humans is what we're really talking about here, not roles of the tech.
No,
because we about know what will happen there. Tech will fix itself and fix stuff. Well, my mind these days is going around how to scale up stuff, so we don't have to do the boring work, and then we have to figure out after that, when all that time is gone and people don't do anything anymore, what to do with that time.
How do you learn new things? Because you're saying that you have a bit of everything, and you dropped out of uni, but you're obviously incredibly driven and incredibly bright. So how do you go about doing that continuously?
I really don't know. I have no idea. There's no plan for that. But if you find something you care about, that stuff will just happen.
So researching online, reading books, talking to
you
people.
You start with a goal. I want everyone in the world to have a bot. Okay, that's the goal, right? And then you just start there. And if you're passionate about it and really care about it, you want that to happen, you'll find a way.
Yeah.
And you will test lots of things and see what works. So I think I'm a guy who make little plans in that phase and just do stuff and learn from that. And the more data you have and the more you have learned, the more easier it is to kind of see the trends and understand what to do. So it's the traditional way of learning. Just fail and fail fast and just do stuff, and you will pretty much get out there.
What's like the worst you've ever felt from failing and then having to get back up?
Well, one company I had once went broke. That's fine, of course, but founder, the other guy and me, we are still not friends.
Yeah, and
that's probably the worst part, where you mess up with people,
yeah.
And you create enemies, which is pretty much what's really happened there. So failing is okay, but I mean, making people hate you is not a really good feeling for none of us, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's awkward.
Yeah, it's terrible. So that's probably the worst part. I mean, other parts you just learn to handle. I'm a stuttering guy, as you probably can hear. But that's also something you learn to kind of deal with. When you're on stage or talking, and right now I'm just talking, all you hear is my voice.
Yeah.
And
a very noisy truck.
And someone else, yeah, and a truck. So all you hear is my voice, and that voice doesn't work because I don't speak like the others. But you still have to learn that's okay. And
yeah. And
when you understand that, the only guy that really cares about it is me.
Yeah.
When I can kind of show that to you, that it's fine, you really don't care about it.
Yes.
So
I saw you have it on your Twitter thing, I think.
Yeah. Fixed stuttering, I have that. that's the longest story.
But the thing is, as well, especially when you know you have so much interesting things to impart to other people, that like everyone's like, "What's coming?" Yeah. So it doesn't matter. It's just like people are really excited to hear what's coming next.
And it can also turn it around. I mean, I've kind of used it as well in sales.
Yeah.
Because if you stutter, you're not lying. You're trying very hard, and I think people think I'm more honest when I'm stutter.
Yeah.
Because I struggle with talking. Or poor guy, he has to really mean that stuff. So it's so really fun. Stupid to say this here, but I happen to stutter more sometimes because I can add some more.
Yeah, you hammer up.
Yeah, I do that just to kind of
Well, pretend. I think everyone, whatever you know, everyone's nuances are. You can turn them up and down. And if people want to get in contact with you and the EdTech Foundry, so the EdTech Foundry more broadly is a Norwegian-based sort of innovation lab for EdTech solutions. Is that correct?
Yeah,
that's that kind
right.
of thing.
We start our own startups. Like I said,
are you hamming that up?
Yeah. So I want you to like me now.
Yeah.
I like to start stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what we do.
And your very first startup, where did you get the money from?
My mom.
Really?
I don't know. Student loan, of course.
And you sort of bootstrapped that and off you went?
Yeah.
Wowzers.
You don't really need money today.
Yeah.
You need time.
Yeah. And what's your handle on Twitter?
Geirsson, Gersand.
Amazing. Thank you so much. It was really fascinating.
Thanks.
Next up, a word from Class Central, which if you're into geeking out over online learning and MOOC reports like I am, you'll probably already know about. Unless you've been asleep, MOOCs or massive online open courses are changing the way we experience higher and further education and workplace learning. With significant online courses available, gaining insight into this fast-paced world is worth spending time on, especially for those implicated by such changes. That's where Class Central comes in. Not only does it list hundreds of courses, and importantly, including non-profit courses as well as the big Ivy League unis, but the MOOC Report blog has some excellent analysis on what's up, down, new, or just slightly left-field. So definitely go and check it out at www.class-central.com/report and let me know what you think. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you enjoy the EdTech podcast, don't forget to rate and review on iTunes or wherever you're listening through. You can also join us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and we love to hear your feedback. If there are questions you'd like asked in every episode, do let me know. And if you're interested in sponsoring, ping me a note at theedtechpodcast@gmail.com. Have a wonderful week and see you next time.
Bye-bye.